Welcome in to Locked On Mitchell Robinson, your daily Mitchell Robinson podcast. I'm Alex Wolf. He's Gavin Shaw. This is actually Locked On Knicks, but we're breaking down Mitchell Robinson, who once again killed it in today's 108-103 win over the Orlando Magic.
And in the Locked On Mitchell Robinson podcast, we do touch on friends of Mitchell Robinson, which include Henry Ellenson, who had himself a spectacular, I know he played a little bit last game, but I'm going to call it his debut as a New York Knick. Also some good stuff from Alonzo Trier. We'll touch on a little bit of the bad, but we don't want to bum you out too much because this was just a great win for the fighting Mitchell Robinson.
And then since I picked a great day to have off the other day with the Spurs win, we're going to talk a little bit about what we've seen over the last two games in our final segment to end things off on Locked On Mitchell Robinson today. And, you know, kind of relish this two-game streak that we currently find ourselves on. All that coming up and more on Locked On Mitchell Robinson.
You are Locked On Knicks, your daily New York Knicks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Knox foul from behind, count it and one. As Fisdale pumps his fist.
What he does is contagious.
Robinson with a catch and slam. Across the lane to Trier. Trier drives.
Becomes infectious.
All right, welcome to Locked On Mitchell Robinson, the number one daily Mitchell Robinson podcast on the multiverse, I should say. We are breaking down the Knicks, obviously, not just Mitchell Robinson. But for this first segment, we're just going to break down Mitchell Robinson because he's the most breakdownable player on the Knicks, period. But first, just a little background info on this game in case anybody didn't get a chance to watch. The Knicks kind of started off flat. They came out, I think they got down, it was like 14-4 in the first couple minutes. Something along those lines. They were down by about 10, you know, and things weren't looking too great. They were looking for a spark, and Mitch came in, and he kind of gave that spark. And Henry Ellenson at first, for as good of a game as he wound up having, wasn't really looking that great to start the game. It was just kind of everybody looked a little off to start things off. But, you know, the Knicks, they kept in it. They narrowed it down to it was a four-point game at the half. Which is good. I mean, it was about like what you would want to see out of them as far as, you know, keeping the score close and trying not to, fall too far behind, keeping things at arm's length. But unfortunately, it just kept staying at about arm's length for most of the game. The Magic, you know, the Knicks would get within, you know, 6-7 points, and then the Magic would extend it back out to, you know, 8-10 points. And the Knicks would kind of claw back, get within, you know, 3 or 4 points, and then they would extend it back out to 6 or 7. Just kind of felt like one of those where the Knicks weren't going to be able to put it together. But then a run down the stretch led by Mitchell Robinson and Ellenson, Alonzo Trier, even to a lesser extent Emmanuel Mudiay, kind of set the Knicks up and got them, you know, they tied the game with, I think it was about 2.5-3 minutes left to go. And then, you know, managed to finally pull ahead and won the game and, you know, kind of won it on free throws, which was nice. You know, they kind of put it away. But let's get right into Mitchell Robinson, Gavin, because I was super impressed with Mitchell Robinson. I mean, he was everywhere again. You know, he's like, this guy is just like blowing my mind every single time that he's out there anymore. He finished up with, let's see the final line here. 17 points and 14 boards and 3 steals and 6 blocks, which was just insane. Blocked a couple jumpers again, blocked a 3-pointer, had one sequence where Aaron Gordon had it on the perimeter against him. Mitch blocked his 3-pointer. Then the Magic got the rebound and passed it back out to Gordon, who then tried to drive on Mitch, who then blocked him again on a layup attempt. I mean, that was just kind of the best like way to encapsulate Mitch's night, at least on the defensive end. He was all over the place. He was everywhere, altering everything and just making everybody's life hell out there except for the Knicks.
That's funny that you mentioned that one, because in my mind, I thought the play where they threw it, he got switched onto Augustine somehow, and that's sort of like the ultimate indictment on the Knicks' defensive strategy or communication or whatever you want to blame it on. But anyways, he gets switched onto DJ Augustine. Vucevic, I can't remember who it was, but he was posting up someone smaller. So Mitch kind of goes over to help, and almost like a guard, like shading over on a big where he's just like swiping at the ball. And Vucevic does what you're supposed to do in that situation. He just whips it back out to Augustine. Augustine gathers. It feels like he's going to have like 20 minutes to shoot a three. And there were a couple of possessions in this game where guys on the Magic did legitimately have 20 minutes to shoot a three. And he's getting ready to fire, rises up. Robinson somehow makes up like the 10 feet or whatever the gap was, like extendo arms all the way out to the roof and somehow finds a way to get a tip finger on it. And it literally looked like if it was like a skilled, like 20-year-old playing against like a bunch of like pretty good 10-year-olds. Like that was the difference just in sheer size and physicality. And he literally, I think we maybe have said this before, but he literally looks like a cartoon character when he's flying out at someone on the perimeter. And there's a reason all these guys keep falling for it, because they watched a film. I think there was a quote that Steve Clifford compared him to Dikembe Mutombo or something, or maybe I'm misremembering that and that was someone on the Knicks. But teams respect him at this point. They know what he can do. And the fact that players are still trying him, to me, that's kind of the ultimate indicator that what he's doing isn't normal, that even great shot blockers in the league don't typically get to the kind of shots he's been getting to of late, because these guys are so confident and they shoot it like nothing is going to happen, and he finds a way to go block it. So to me, that almost tells you he's unique. And the fact that he's maybe unique defensively as a 20-year-old, that's terrifying. And we've been so high on him over the last couple of weeks. And I almost think we haven't done him justice in how good he might be. And we might not fully be realizing yet. But tonight, I think, was another indicator that he could be even more special than our wildest expectations. And to that point, this is something I sent to you earlier, Alex. You went through his stats: 17 points, 14 rebounds, 6 blocks, 3 steals. One of 3 rookie bigs to ever hit all those benchmarks in a game ever. Last guy to do it was David Robinson in 1989. Only other person to do it before that was Ralph Sampson in 1984. So that sort of puts in perspective what you're seeing on film.
And another one that I got off of NBA on ESPN, he's the 3rd rookie in the last 25 years with a double-double and 5 blocks in 2 consecutive games. And the 2 guys that he joins in that prestigious category is Yao Ming and Tim Duncan. So he keeps finding himself in the conversation with these guys who have some pretty good resumes. So it's very encouraging to see what he's doing right now. I'm starting to run out of words to like describe him. I actually tweeted what I thought would be kind of a hot take right after the game, and it was met with mostly like, yeah, I totally agree. Like, this is exactly what I'm thinking now. I think if it came down to it and the Knicks hit the off season this year, and let's say the pipe dream happens and you get the number one pick, you get Zion Williamson, you get Kyrie and Kevin Durant willing to sign here, and trading for Anthony Davis becomes a real possibility, I actually think at this point that if it would come down to it and the Knicks would have to give up Zion Williamson and Mitchell Robinson in this like hypothetical dream scenario, I would not do that deal, because I legitimately think that Mitchell Robinson has played himself up to the point of being that valuable now, like particularly on the contract that he's on. I mean, he's making somewhere between $1.5 and $2 million for each of the next 3 seasons after this one, which is just like wild. Like, the production that he's already putting out there, and he's only going to be eating up, you know, at most a little less than 2% of the cap going forward. So I'm like so stoked to have him on this roster right now. And there's like, at this particular moment in time, there's like so few players or anything that I would even consider like trading him for, because I really think he's going to be that valuable going forward now.
You know, I'm usually the guy who always says, like, you got to trade for the short thing. And this, I think Anthony Davis is something we've disagreed on a lot in terms of what you would give up for him. I think I agree with that. Like, as insane as it sounds coming from me, but if you hypothetically got that number one pick, which the Knicks are, unfortunately, I guess they're not playing themselves out of number one pick odds. They're potentially increasing their risk in terms of how far they can fall with winning these games. But if you get the number one pick and you get those two guys for a relatively limited amount of money, that would just give you so much more roster flexibility. Like in a vacuum, I'd still rather have Anthony Davis than Zion and Mitch, just because of, how proven he is. But when you take the contracts into account, I do think that's a good take. So I agree with it. Should we talk about some of his other exploits tonight? I mean, just some of the offensive rebounding was just ridiculous. Like the one he had of with DSJ, where he somehow got it and like was sort of getting hacked and just kind of flipped it in with his offhand, I thought was just sort of nuts. Almost had I think his best dunk of the season if he had converted that one where it was lobbed up to him and Jonathan Isaac sort of met him at the rim, fouled him, and he almost finished it despite that. That would have been pretty ridiculous. Just a couple of big plays down the stretch. He altered Isaac's shot with about 2.5 minutes left and then blocked his putback attempt. 2 minutes left, scored in that lob from Trier. It's not even like the stat line. The fact that he was so involved in such a close game, and you look at the lineup around him to close this one out. Not that the Magic are great, but they are a borderline playoff team in the East, and he's playing with Emmanuel Mudiay, who's an NBA castoff, Alonzo Trier, undrafted, John Jenkins, G League, Henry Ellenson, G League, and Mitchell Robinson is leading that ragtag group to a victory. I just think that at his age, and again, like you want to keep seeing it, you want to make sure it's not a fluke, but that's just incredibly encouraging. I don't know what else to say about it.
Yeah, I mean, when I think about Mitch and like the future, I just think about what happens when he's out there with guys that actually command respect. You know what I mean? Like, most of the guys on the Knicks now are let's be honest, not that good. You know, they were playing Henry Ellenson for 36 minutes today. And like, as good as Ellenson played, like all things considered, that guy was, looked like he was going to be out of the league 2 weeks ago. You know, he got cut by the Pistons and was like, I don't know if anybody's going to sign him. He might just end up in the G League, whatever. Gets picked up by the Knicks and plays 36 minutes today. You got Emmanuel Mudiay, who you already mentioned was like pushing towards out of the league before the year and has sort of resurrected his career. And then, but who are like the best 3-point shooters that he's playing with? You know, it's like John Jenkins. Yeah. Like Dotson when he's hot, Trier when he's hot, I guess Luke Kornet when he's hot. But there's like qualifiers on all those guys. Like every single one of them, it's like, oh, when they're shooting really well, they're a good 3-point shooter. But then you look at their averages for the season, it's like, oh, but the best among them, Kornet aside, who's been, struggling so much lately that he's just not even been playing to even lower his average. But like most of those guys are shooting, 33% to 36% from three. And like I shudder to think like with the gravity that Mitch has on the inside, like going towards the hoop where he's drawing all these defenders now and drawing all this attention, like what it's going to be like when those guys can't cheat off him and it's just him and someone else and there's no help or anything like that. I think it's going to be filthy. Like if you have an actual 3-point shooter on the outside, because it's going to create so many like situations where the defense has to make a really difficult choice, and there's like a really good chance you're going to get burned either way if you either leave Mitchell Robinson alone or leave a good 3-point shooter alone. So it's very exciting to think about. I'm like, the way he's been playing lately has just had me like totally like salivating at what the future is going to look like with him.
Yeah, and it was something I even mentioned on the Spurs podcast. And I think I mentioned it one time with you before too, Alex, but if you just threw him on the Rockets right now with Chris Paul and James Harden, like I do think he'd be a 20-point-per-game scorer, just purely off of lobs, like playing in that system with that open of a floor. Like I legitimately believe he could do about 90% of what Clint Capella does from day one. And even beyond that, I'm just sort of looking back at it and I'm stunned. Just think of like some of the alternate timelines and like teams he could have gone to and like really genuinely helped. Like if the Warriors had taken him, like obviously they have Boogie, but he's kind of like the super rich man's version of what they wanted and got out of Jordan Bell.
Well, they didn't even have Boogie at that point. At the time of the draft.
Right. Yeah, that's a good point. And he would have been, I mean, obviously they would have finished with the lineup of death, but just as like a fifth starter, like if he developed the same way, and maybe he wouldn't have because he wouldn't have gotten the same opportunities. But could you imagine him playing off of just the floor spacing that Steph, Clay, and Durant generate? It would have been sort of unholy. And I think teams would have legitimately quit at that point if he ended up there. And then you look at the Lakers, who like so desperate, like obviously they have JaVale, but he is sort of toxic defensively. Like you could make an argument they would have made the playoffs if they had taken Mitchell Robinson. I just think it's crazy. Like that's kind of an interesting perspective to look at it, because obviously we talk about what he's doing for the Knicks and what he's doing for this team that, I mean, at least this season isn't going anywhere. He could have swung seasons for some of these like playoff teams if they had just taken a chance on him late in the first round.
Yeah, if we're being real, if he got drafted by the Lakers, he'd be a Pelican right now. Because if he had shown the same flashes with the Lakers that he's shown so far on the Knicks, like, that deal would have been done. They would have been like, okay, you know, send us Lonzo, Ingram, Mitch Robinson, and, you know, maybe they still could have shook down Kuzma at that point. It sounded like the Lakers, outside of trading whatever their ridiculous demand was of, like, 4 first and 4 second-round picks, like, anyone on the roster was fair game, it sounded like, and they were willing to trade pretty much anyone on the roster. It was just, like, the future draft picks is what kind of finally drove the wedge there. So, yeah. Yeah, if the Lakers had taken him, he would have been a Pelican for sure. But yeah, I don't know. I feel like I could gush about Mitch Robinson for another like 20 minutes, but we should probably wrap this up. Do you have any other last like interesting nuggets about Mitch you want to add before we move on to everybody else?
No, I wish I did. I think I spoiled them all, but we'll have some for you guys next time.
Yeah. All right. Well, we'll take a quick break. We'll come back to Locked On Knicks and Locked On Mitchell Robinson now. So we'll be back in just a moment.
You are Locked On Mitchell Robinson. We are not going to call it anything else for the rest of this podcast, maybe for the rest of the season. Alex, I think you're ahead of your time, because this Locked On Podcast Network as a collective was sort of the first daily podcast network for your team. There is not yet a daily podcast network for your favorite player. And at this point, I genuinely wonder if we just kind of tightened up the microscope and really just focused on Mitchell Robinson and turned this entire podcast into Locked On Mitch, would we have more listeners? And I'm not sure of the answer.
Right now, I think we'd have more listeners because everybody just wants to hear about Mitchell Robinson. I can already tell you, when I edit this episode, I'm calling it Locked On Mitchell Robinson. And then maybe for the rest of the season, if we do other Locked On Mitchell Robinson episodes, we'll just call it like part 2, part 3, whatever. Because there's going to be more. There's definitely going to be more Locked On Mitchell Robinson episodes, I think.
I wonder, the only issue there is if that guy ever gets hurt, it kind of kills your podcast.
Yeah, I guess then you could call on, it would just be like different doctors every day. You would have doctor guests. Like, we have Dr. So-and-so from the, you know, New York Hospital for Special Surgery on today. Tell us a little bit about Mitchell Robinson and his injury, blah, blah, blah. I don't even want to joke about that, though, because I really don't want him to get hurt again, because since he's been healthy, it's been so goddamn fun.
Yeah, you're on like your fourth doctor, and you're like, you know, he's strep throat. It's going to be a week of antibiotics, and he's going to be all right. It's like, all right, okay, all right, being safe. Just being safe. All right. Yeah, I guess we could, even though it's kind of against our ethos on Locked On Mitch. We can talk about some other guys. Henry Ellenson. First note I wrote down: who needs KD? We have HE. 13-9-5-2 in this game, and he was like I don't know. I don't think like this probably isn't sustainable in any way, but I do already kind of think he's a better player than Luke Kornet, as much as that pains me to say. Like some of the stuff he did, like passing the basketball, like really shocked me. Like, he worked that beautiful PNR with Mitch that resulted in kind of like a little underhand lob that was similar to the pass that Knox threw Robinson in the Spurs game. He had this nice little backdoor sort of dribbling across the lane to John Jenkins, and it's something like you see Nikola Jokic do like 2 or 3 times a game. And I don't want to go over the top. Like, I'd like to see him like do this more than once before I get overexcited about him, before I say he's even going to be on the Knicks past these 10 days. But it was just an awesome game for him, and it was capped off by that big 3-ball with 2 minutes left that got the bang from Mike Breen. And I think that's pretty cool, because like, if like, let's just say this goes badly, like he doesn't end up having a long NBA career, like the fact that you got like one of those in your lifetime, like if I was a fringe NBA player, like I would take that, call it a career, and say it went pretty well, all things considered.
Yeah. Yeah, it was definitely, it was a good game for him. Like, I think to your point about, like, who's better between he and Luke Kornet already, like, I think if you could fuse them into one player, they'd be, like, a good NBA bench player. But as it stands, they're both pretty flawed. Like, I think as far as Ellinson goes, the flaws are mostly, like, defense and like only defense. I mean, he got just cooked by like whoever he was facing on defense. Vucevic had a day on him. Like Vucevic was doing whatever he wanted to do. Then I think Aaron Gordon like posted him up a couple times. I mean, it just doesn't seem like Ellinson doesn't look frail, you know, like he looks like physically muscle wise, you know, like he's maybe even bigger than Mitchell Robinson, you know, at least like physically and like pure poundage wise. But as far as like actual on court strength, he was just getting thrown around like a rag doll all night on defense. But I mean, I don't want to overshadow what he did on offense, obviously, with the defense, but that's my biggest concern with him. And that's like what I generally think of before I think like with guys like this that are like fringe roster guys, I look at like, well, why can't they stick around versus like, well, why can they? But as far as why he could stick around, I mean, if he could shoot the three like he did tonight, then forget about it. I mean, that's like a great skill. He's a lot more mobile than Kornet is. Again, not in a way that really translates to defense, but on offense for sure. I mean, he showed tonight he could take a ball at the top of the 3-point line, like on a handoff, and he's not just like, you know, planted there with cement shoes. Like generally if Luke Kornet comes up and grabs that ball, like he's generally like stuck there, you know, like he's either going to take a 3-point shot or he's going to start like looking around to pass to somebody. We've seen how it works when he tries to drive through the hoop and it just does not work because he doesn't have the foot speed to do that or the first step. You know, he always ends up facing a ton of opposition at the rim if he tries to do that. So Ellinson showed, I mean, the play that stood out to me the most was he took the ball from, you know, up near the top of the, I don't remember exactly where he started. It was up near the 3-point line, like, you know, free throw line, somewhere in that general area. And, you know, took the ball and drove left and hit Mitchell Robinson for just like a brilliant alley-oop in, I think it was the second quarter. Yeah. And that was probably one of my favorite plays from him in the whole game because that showed like what you see off the scouting reports for him back from like when he got drafted, which is like, he's a big, but he's surprisingly nimble on offense, and he's a surprisingly good ball handler and passer. So I definitely saw some of that out of him. Like I really enjoyed that. That was probably my favorite part of the game tonight, more so than the dagger three or anything else, was seeing how mobile he is on offense and how able to keep the ball going he was.
I think to that point, the coast-to-coast he had off the Robinson block that ended with him sort of hitting that runner fading out of bounds, that was – there are like you could count on – maybe not one hand, but you could certainly count on two hands, like the number of bigs in the NBA who can do that. Maybe I'm exaggerating a little bit, but like to me, like that was like a flash of like Pascal Siakam, like a guy like 6'10", 6'11", that can just grab a loose ball and sprint coast to coast and then has the touch to actually like fit. Like some guys can do that and like they're just like freak athletes and they can dunk it. But when there's actually someone back to contest, most often that ends in a turnover. The fact that he kept a handle on the ball and then actually the touch to finish it. I mean, to me, that's more, I mean, and it's exactly what you said, the mobility, that's kind of the biggest indicator that he might find a way to be a long-term NBA player. And he has sort of sharpened up his game enough in his time outside of the league. And I know he had a run with Jeff Van Gundy's USA select team. And maybe he's genuinely a different guy now, almost regardless of that. And regardless of if the defense proves to be too awful to keep him long term, I do want to see him at least for the rest of his 10 days and maybe the rest of the season gets a lot of minutes with Mitch because I like the chemistry between those two. And I think long term, a playmaking four is sort of the dream guy you want to put next to Mitch.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely need like, you know, I think that the ideal, if Mitch is like sort of your, and you don't want this to be the case long term, but if Mitch is sort of like your centerpiece, you know, that you're featuring, you want guys that can, you know, break down the defense and draw enough attention away from him that he can get open for those lobs and, you know, get enough space to get those offensive rebounds for putbacks and stuff like that. And Ellinson's definitely, he fits that mold if he's operating at his best self, you know, where he's hitting three-pointers, keeping the defense honest that way. If he's able to sort of break defenses down off the dribble, and certainly with the passing ability, you know, you want guys that can put the ball at least, you know, we joke about all the time about you could put it anywhere, you know, within about 6 feet of the cylinder, and Mitchell Robinson can put it down. But you want someone who can get it as close as possible to, you know, the optimal position for him to be able to throw it down. And I definitely think that Ellinson fits the bill if he's doing things, you know, at his best. But I think unless you have anything else to add on Ellinson, we should probably move on to Alonzo Trier real quick, because I thought that Trier had, again, one of his better games in recent memory.
Now let's talk about him. Plus 21 in 20 minutes, excuse me, 21 minutes, found a way to get 18 points, 5 rebounds, 2 assists, 3 steals in 21 minutes. And obviously some of those free throws and in turn the points total were padded in not garbage time, but I guess lead protect time. Despite that, again, a really awesome game. And what I really enjoyed about him recently, and he showed a little bit of this earlier in the season, but just the layup package from him. Like, he had one early in the game where it was sort of the MJ Light switch hands layup. And then he had just, I think, as far as like, I consider myself sort of a layup connoisseur. And I'm not sure if too many other Knicks fans would put themselves in that category. But to me, like a really like ridiculously fancy tough layup is almost cooler than a dunk. And I think that's only because I know that I would never be able to dunk. So it's more relatable for me. But the one he had where he had that he went behind his back into a spin move, and then it was sort of like he was facing the basket and did kind of like an underhanded double pump and was able to finish with the right hand on the left side, but it wasn't like he was facing the wrong way for it to be closer to the basket, so it was almost like the right hand was further away. If you saw the play, you know what I'm describing. If you don't, you probably have no idea what I'm talking about. But it was just sort of that off balance, off timing, like I'm trying to think of the right word to sum it up, but I guess not particularly fundamental, but almost like he's able to dictate his finish by exactly what the angle that he has is and what's most conducive to success at that angle. And the fact that he has that variety, it's certainly not Kyrie Irving-esque or even what Steph can do, but he shows like small little flashes of that. And to me, it just like with all these rookies, like I keep saying this, it just like how much can you show me? Like how much variety can you show me? How many like flashes of interest can I see from you? And true, that's just sort of another little area that he's potentially interesting. And as those continue to accumulate, I think it solidifies in my mind the idea that he's a long-term piece versus just a flash in a pan.
Yeah, I mean, he shot 4 or 5 on his way to that 18 points because he also shot 9 of 10 from the free throw line. But really, like, as you were just talking there, I literally went on NBA.com/stats and I pulled up all of his takes that he took. And there wasn't, outside the very last one, which was a mid-range shot that he kind of forced, there wasn't a single take that he had tonight that I wasn't like, that wasn't something that it had me say like, wow, that's like an awesome shot. Because he had those two layups that you mentioned, which the first one was kind of that, like you said, like Jordan-esque, like switch hand layup. Then he had that crazy spin move into like a weird off balance reverse. Like that was a crazy layup. But then the other two buckets, one was just a spot up three, which was one of Ellinson's assists, caught him like it on just the swing around the perimeter. It started in the corner with someone, I forget who, then went to Ellinson, and then he swung it to Trier, kind of for like the elbow three. And he like popped that and hit it, which, I mean, I feel like a broken record. And I'm sure people that listen are probably like, Alex, shut up about Alonzo Trier with, you know, shooting spot up shots. But I really think that that's like the key to unlocking him as a scorer and as like a, you know, as like a multifunctional player, is him like embracing the spot up shot and really getting good at it. So I was encouraged to see that. And in his last one, I thought, see, the layups were filthy. I thought the one that was the like absolute dirtiest take he took all night was he was driving in, as if he was about to run in and try to like absorb contact for a layup, and then stopped like a little bit before the restricted area, like on a dime, and then took one step back to like up towards the free throw line and just shot this jumper. And I think it was like Augustine guarding him at the time. And like Augustine came about like a half an inch of misstep away from like falling on his face towards the basket, because it was like a really nasty move. Like that was peak Trier as far as like being able to control his body the way that he does and like control his dribble and everything. So I was super impressed with that, even if it only led to like a mid-range shot, which obviously like analytically isn't the best shot in the world, but it was so pretty. Like when I saw that, I was like, damn, that was really impressive. Like that was a feat of physicality right there, I thought.
Yeah, he's just so refined for, I mean, and obviously pretty old for a rookie at 22, but it's like, it's sort of what you expect. Like instead of an undrafted free agent, like I almost picture him as a guy who played a year or two in the NBA, wasn't that good, went over to Europe for 5 years, really like ironed out every single aspect of his game, came back and was just a killer. Like that's almost how I think of him. The fact that he's 22, and like I just wonder, like just because of the fact that he's so sharp already, like how much more of a ceiling is there? But just the idea that he can maintain what he's currently doing over a larger sample size and maybe even a larger workload, depending on what kind of team the Knicks end up being in the next couple of years, is really interesting. Or alternatively, if the Knicks are as good as we hope they are in the next couple of seasons and they sign the players we want, can he maintain this in big games against good teams getting less shots? And those are all questions to be answered in the future. But what we're seeing from him right now is so promising. And I never thought I'd say this, but really outside of Mitchell Robinson, he's almost the most consistent guy on this team of late.
Yeah. Oh, definitely. Yeah. I mean, he's because, you know, this might be a good segue, but like because we were going to talk a little bit just about the negatives, which like I don't want to harp on negatives too much for this game, because it was honestly a super enjoyable game to watch. But I mean, you look at guys like Knox, and Knox, it seems like either shoots, like today he shot 3 of 16, which is good for 18.8% from the floor. And he looked every bit of that. Like he really wasn't, he had a really, really off game. I actually played a really relatively low minute total for him of 27 minutes for this game, you know, down from his usual like 38 minutes. So I guess it sort of reflected that. And then you have Dennis Smith Jr., who tonight, you know, he shot 3 of 10, played 21 minutes. I mean, I didn't think that he played particularly egregiously bad or anything. Like, he just, I think that he just got cold at the wrong time towards the end of the game. And then Moutier was out there. And even Moutier shot 8 of 18. And, I mean, he wound up with decent counting stats of, he had 19 points and 8 boards, 3 assists, 2 turnovers. The assist to turnover ratio, as per usual, is not pretty with him, but I mean, he had an okay game. But yeah, I think like Trier and Mitch are the two guys that every time they go out there lately, you're like, yeah, these guys, they're gonna put it down. Like, they know what they're doing. They're gonna make shit happen, and, you know, make sure that the team hums, you know, on both ends for whatever contributions they can offer. But yeah, I was not a huge fan of Knox's game today. I mean, I haven't brought myself to go back and look at like the individual shots that he took again, but it was just one of those nights where he was not feeling it. He was playing out of control a lot, which I think is a big minus for him, particularly going towards the rim. You know, he gets into like flail mode, and I think that maybe in his mind, he thinks that he'll get foul calls like that because like some of the better players in the league get calls on stuff like that when they essentially just drive towards the rim and like flail their arms out and act like they just got shot. But that doesn't really work when you're a rookie and, you know, not even like the best rookie, you know? So I don't know. I didn't think he played within himself tonight, I guess is my biggest point with that, but I don't know how you feel about him.
Yeah. I'll say the tough thing with Knox right now, and I think this is, I mean, to some degree, the source of his struggles on nights where he just doesn't have it shooting the ball. He just, at least at this point in his career, he doesn't find other ways to contribute. And to me, and this is really unfair to Knox, because Luka Doncic is like sort of a once in a generation type rookie, but like even like let's just like remove the scoring and like Luka like is like at least at this point an infinitely better just pure scorer than Knox is, but he's able to like he's one of those guys that can have, and I'm talking about Luka right now, who can have a genuinely great game even when he has less than 10 points. And for Knox right now, it's hard to say that he can even be like even tread water when he doesn't shoot the ball well. And I think that's pretty typical of a rookie. So it's not even something that scares me long term. But when you're looking for him to be special, it is something that I guess worries me just a tiny bit in sort of a big picture sense. But Alex, I think we're kind of impeding on our next segment where we sort of want to talk about the trends over the last couple of games and which ones we can look at going forward. So let's head to that. We'll take a quick break and we'll be back on Locked On Knicks.
All right, welcome back in for your last segment of Locked On Mitch, aka Locked On Knicks for today. We're going to just talk a little bit real quick about, because I have the greatest timing in the world, Gavin, and every time that the Knicks have won recently have been nights that I've been off. The first one was on Valentine's night when I decided to cook for my wife. They decided to win the game then, so then I had to cover that the next day. And then, of course, the other night against the Spurs, you were so nice to be like, oh, well, you just did a bunch of shows last week. Why don't you take the night off? And I was like, oh, yeah, it's the Spurs. They're going to get whomped. Like, I don't care. Like, I'll take a night off. And then they have, like, probably their best game of the whole season. So I selfishly want to talk a little bit about that game, but also in conjunction with this game, kind of and trends that we've seen over the last couple games. I would say probably the biggest thing to me, and I don't know how you feel about this, is that I think that it seems like they're finally finding a like team concept, which has been something that we've kind of been waiting on the whole year. Like guys like Smith, like Trier, you could argue even like Moutier sometimes, but I think that he's one of the holdovers as far as like what I'm about to say, but like guys that previously were mostly seemed like they were looking for their own shot out there. And, you know, passing the ball was only kind of if they couldn't achieve that end, seem like they're now looking more to involve others and playing more within like a team offense finally. And like I said, the two guys I see the most with that are Smith and Trier. Smith seems like he's making a concerted effort to at this point, just make the right read. Like almost you talk about point guards being like the quarterbacks of the NBA, but it's like he's looking off, you know, one or two receivers now sometimes, you know, like his first option might be drive to the hoop and score. But then he's got a second read of like, oh, well, Dotson might be open for a three over here. Then his third read is, OK, I'll look for Mitch under the hoop. And then his fourth read is like, OK, I'll dribble it back out and around and, you know, take it back out and restart. And it just seems like he and Trier, to me in particular, feel like they've been really embracing that over the last few games and playing more within an offense rather than kind of just looking for shots for themselves. And that's been pretty refreshing to me.
Yeah, for Trier in particular, that has me like genuinely in my heart, I feel happiness about it. And that's because I wasn't sure earlier this season he was ever going to be able to be that guy, because in college he was really never that guy. He was sort of like Kobe at Arizona, and not in terms of ability, but just in terms of role and like the type of shots he would take. And they would sort of go down with the ship. When he was playing well, they'd be really, really good. When he wasn't, they wouldn't. And you sort of saw that early in his NBA career where he'd have these spectacular scoring nights. And you look at the box when you'd see like one assist, like three turnovers, you'd be like, that's not good. And you'd see that a few games in a row. And I was just thinking like, okay, clearly like he has some scoring talent and that's spectacular. And you know what? I mean, if you get that out of a second round pick and you get a guy who could maybe at his best be a spark plug off the bench, like, you know what, you take it. Not a second round pick, just a guy who went undrafted. But the fact that he's flashing even more than that, and he's showing not only the ability to be unselfish, but some genuine passing instincts, is kind of above and beyond my wildest expectations. And I'm going to take this in a direction that is probably irresponsible, given we don't know anything yet about the next summer, and he probably won't even be on the team. But it does sort of make me wonder how someone like Kyrie Irving will fit into this offense if he does decide to come to the Knicks. And again, that's certainly putting the cart before the horse. And I apologize if I'm jinxing things, but it's something that the last two games have made me think about, because you're watching it right now on the Boston Celtics, where they have arguably been better without him. And that's just because of his tendency to dominate the ball. And this is something that we've talked a lot about with Trier and DSJ, though, as you mentioned, DSJ continuing to get better at it. Like, those two guys sort of succeed on their own terms, and they want to play on their own terms. And whether or not that's conducive to team success, it almost feels irrelevant at points. And they're sort of going to play their game. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, it doesn't. But it's almost outside of the context of the rest of the team. And obviously, Kyrie is infinitely better and more accomplished than DSJ and Trier. But I just wonder if he does end up signing, into a lesser degree, KD. But KD's like so good, it doesn't even matter. I just wonder, like, are you going to be able to continue this equal opportunity offense? Well, you have to build the offense around them. And obviously, if you can get them, you want to play to their strengths. But I don't know if any of this is making sense. But I guess my big picture point is, can you sort of maintain this everyone eats system with a Kyrie Irving-like point guard? And if not him, maybe someone like him in that spot.
Yeah, I think it's a real concern. I don't know if I'd call it a concern. Like, something less than a concern, but not totally trivial. You know what I mean? Like,
first world problem.
A first world problem. That's perfect. it's a real first world problem. Like, it's like, okay, you get Kyrie Irving, like, hell yeah. Like, this is a dude that's proven that he can be a championship point guard. And you know what? Ultimately, that skill that you were just mentioning that can sometimes be an Achilles heel to, like, the team offense is ultimately his ability to break anybody down off the dribble and get a bucket whenever he wants to, is the skill that wins championships and has won a championship for them in the past. So, or not for the Celtics, but for the Cavs. And it doesn't look like the Celtics are going to win one this year either, because I don't even know where they're headed right now. As we're recording this, there was, like, all these memes came out tonight of Kyrie was, like, staring a hole through Jason Tatum and some of the other kids, like, sitting on the end of the bench, like, just staring with scorn at the rest of his teammates. And he also had some kind of terse quotes after the game as well. But I don't know. I definitely get where you're coming from, though. Like, I don't think I wouldn't worry about it too much, but there would be a lingering bit of worry until I would see him on the court. I would just hope that, like, I can't think of anyone that Kyrie's played with at the center position that has the vertical gravity like a Mitch Robinson has now.
Yeah.
And you know, if they kept DeAndre Jordan, you know, if this dream scenario comes true and they manage to keep DeAndre Jordan for, like, the mid-level or something like that, like, same deal with him to a lesser degree than Mitch at this point, I think. But they're both, like, vertical guys that can, you know, really draw defenders into the paint. And I would hope that, like, in a situation like that, Kyrie would be smart enough to, you know, read the situation right. And, like, if the situation's right to, you know, toss a lob or whatever, I would think he wouldn't have any problem doing that. If the situation's right to pop a three or, you know, drive to the hoop, he obviously has no problem doing that. So, I don't know. It's, like, again, big first world problem. And, you know, it's definitely putting the cart before the horse. But I definitely get what you're saying there.
Yeah. Anyways, that was, yeah, I guess we were sort of going into this segment wanting to talk about the long-term implications of what we've seen the last two games, but, oh, and I know that's sort of taking in a hypothetical direction, but Alex, I don't know about you, that's sort of what I had, and I guess it took literally until we started talking for that to click for me, but that's sort of my thoughts on this. Obviously, we sort of touched on the long-term upside of Mitch, the long-term upside of Trier. Do you have anything to sort of wrap this up?
No, not really. I mean, I guess, yeah, that's pretty much it. Like, you
that's
know,
okay.
I just
this is a little podcast.
Yeah, I've just really been enjoying these last couple games. And you know what? I guess my thing to just, I guess, finally wrap this up with a bow will be, I'll just say to anybody who's, like, pissed about winning these two games in a row because, like, it's ruining the tank or whatever, like, you just need to lighten up. Like, at this point, you know, if you finish anywhere in the bottom four teams, you're in a good enough spot for the lottery that it's, like, almost trivial. It's like 14% through the first three slots and 12.5% in the fourth slot. of getting the number one pick. And obviously, like, your ability to fall further back gets greater. But I don't know. I'm kind of just of the belief at this point that things are going to fall how they're going to fall no matter what. And we shouldn't stress ourselves over this. So I guess my closing advice for everybody today would just be to enjoy winning whatever games we win for the rest of the year, because ultimately wins at this point show growth of the young core. And even if you have a night like tonight where, you know, maybe your lottery rookie Kevin Knox doesn't play that good, you still got Mitchell Robinson playing really good, you got Lonzo Trier playing really good, and, you know, things are still looking pretty up for this team right now. So I guess my final closing point.
Yeah, that's sort of the beauty of how Mitchell Robinson's playing. Obviously, like, I'm still very high on Kevin Knox, but it's almost like if he ends up being as good as I thought he could be earlier in the season, a lot of people thought he could be early in the season, it's almost like found money at this point, because you already got that lottery value in Mitchell Robinson. So I guess that's kind of my closing point. My final closing point is I loved hearing genuine joy in Mike Breen's voice tonight. He's an angel. He deserves it. Same with Clyde. Against the Spurs, like, there was just all this, like, he sounded excited and engaged and not bummed out anymore. And I think those two guys have just sat through so much crappy basketball over the last 20 years. Like, they deserve these little flashes that are hopefully just a prelude to something even bigger. All right. With that, we will finish up this edition of Locked On Mitch. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope we're going to get to call a few more episodes Locked On Mitch because he has more games like this. But until next time, I'm Gavin. He's Alex. Peace out. Have a good week. We'll be back with you certainly by Friday at the latest, maybe even earlier. So keep your eyes peeled for that. Peace out.